Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonye, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Aginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello everyone, this is Blue Otter coming to you from Booker County, deep in the mysterious Ozarks and Mid-America. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio, and our guest today is Dottie Daigle, a member of the Wolf Clan of the Cherokee Nation. Well, I understand that we're going to be talking about our common teacher, John Red Hat, today. John was a really beloved elder of the original Kitu'a Society, a member of the Longhair Clan.
He was a member of the Cherokee Nation in Salacor and of the Southwest Township here in Albuquerque, who are affiliated with the Cherokee Nation.
Right. John was telling me that the townships are a constitutional part of the Cherokee Nation, and that they still adopt people, and that you're one of these adoptees into the Wolf Clan.
Yes, I am. And that's a good thing. It's like a Jewish ceremony when they have to have a quorum of 10. I think in there it's 10 adults that we had. I think in the Jewish it's 10 men, but we had 10 adults.
Right.
And so we had an adoption ceremony, and it worked out very well.
Well, how did you come to know John?
Well, John and I worked together. He was contract for this. We're working for the government on the same project that I was, except I was civil service. And we were designing software applications for computers for BLM, Bureau of Land Management. Worked together on the same system.
How many years ago was that?
Oh, let's see. I've been retired now for 10 years, so it was more about 5 years prior to that. But it was back like in 1995, something like
Something like that. Well, what I know, John passed away on the 30th of December.
Yes, he did.
And I know that while he was alive, he felt very much constrained, like many elders do, but that he wanted certain things passed on after he passed away. It's because of the political realities nowadays, I guess it's just easier for elders to wait and make their statement after they have walked west and or riding the wind than it is to put up with the slings and arrows from their own people.
It could be, but he was in warrior mode so much of the time to break down the corruption in some of the Cherokee tribes and to bring the tribes, bring them to a good place, to bring back ceremony to the Cherokee people. That's what he and Dr. Gillihan really felt strongly about, that they needed to help the Cherokee people bring back ceremony, to bring back the spiritual part of the Cherokee people. So towards the end of his time, over the last couple months, I guess, he got the message that Red Hat was weak. And so he thought, well, maybe it was going to be that he was going to be going out and speaking, and he thought, well, I really don't have very good health, so I don't know how I'm going to be doing that. But he started brushing up on his Cherokee because he thought, well, okay, if Red Hat is going to speak, then maybe he needs to be more fluent in Cherokee. So he was studying that. That's what he spent a lot of his time on the last few months.
So Spirit told him he was going to be speaking, huh?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, I know he didn't make a move unless Creator told him what to do. He had a direct connection with the Creator and heard his voice.
It seemed like the veil was so thin between him and the other side, between him and Creator. And they were guiding him so much. So then he told me, I was writing a book about the teachings already, but it had a different title on it, and so then he thought about it, and thought, well, maybe Red Hat's secret was not necessarily going to be him going out and speaking, but he thought maybe it was going to be a book. Yeah. So then he asked me if I would change the title of that book he had to
Well, I guess, I know I've seen him shortly after he passed, and he came to me and indicated he was going to be backing us up in what we were doing. I know that the traditional elders, and he was a traditional Ketua Society elder, have felt very much constrained for a very long time because of family infighting and the political realities to be very verbal, but I think he finally decided that the messages were just too important to not get out, and he knew the realities of the prophecies, and had also been adopted by Chief Mike of Oribe, which is the center of Hopi culture, and was thoroughly versed in Native prophecy. He knew, and he knew exactly where we stood and what the stakes were, and wasn't afraid to speak out.
Yes, that's true. And the Hopi, that was a very important part of his work, it appears. And it appears now that the Hopi are, again, going to be in the spotlight. That time will tell on that. I think most of the Hopi prophecies have already been fulfilled.
Yeah, they certainly have. They certainly have. So,
John wanted to get that book out, Red Hat Jesus, because it was his message. He wanted so much to help the Cherokee people and the people. So one of his favorite chapters was in the Bible was Isaiah chapter 66. And that speaks of the coming judgment. And it says, because I called and no one would answer, I spoke and no one listened. They have done what I regard as evil, have chosen what is favorite. So yes, John believes the judgment is coming, that the die has been cast. There is nothing that we can do to stop this anymore. The great purification that the Hopi spoke about and prophesied, and that is very close.
Yeah, Scotty, I know he really did believe that, and I do too. I think most people don't bother to read their own, you know, their own scriptures, whether they be Jewish or Christian or whatever, much less paying attention to native prophecies. But the Ketuvah origin story very clearly pointed out exactly where we stand today. And the saddest thing about it is that the vast majority of people I know that claim to be Cherokee really have no idea of what it means to be a Cherokee. And I knew John knew exactly what it meant to be a Cherokee, and it was the business of his clan anciently to teach people who were aliens or adoptees are people that came into the tribe what it meant to be a Cherokee. And that's the reason why I wanted to have you on. And I know that was the main thrust of Red Hat Speaks, the book that you and John wrote together.
Well, it was John, he had been teaching me so many things over about the last 10 years that so many people had asked me if I would put these into, break them down heavy so that they would be lost. And so that was the purpose of Red Hat Speaks, to write all these teachings up so that they could be shared with other people so they wouldn't be lost. It's like so many of our elders are passing away. The Hopi, the elders, John, I can't remember the name, Tasha, something like that. They are all passing away. The new generation doesn't know the things that the elders do.
Dan Kachangwa of the Sun Clan.
Right. And so that was the purpose of our book, to break these teachings down so they would be preserved. And to help the Cherokee people come back to be Cherokee, because they have lost so much. They have forgotten community. Back in 1800s, when the Cherokee Nation, when they existed, I believe it was in Oklahoma, they had Indian territory, so the Indians, the Cherokee, didn't each have their own land. They all lived with all the land in common, and they had their own homes, but they shared as a community. They shared helping each other, supporting each other, and taking care of the children. It was done as a community, and they were there for each other. And now, they too, along with the white man and other races, have gone to single family type of dwelling, single family thinking. And it's like the elders, when John got sick and couldn't live by himself, I moved in and helped him. I moved in with Elder Red Hat to help him because he could no longer live by himself. And that's how the Ketuvah Society is. When someone gets older or for some reason they can't live alone anymore, they don't move them into a nursing home or something. They have somebody move in with them to take care of them so that the elderly can live in their own home. They respect the elderly. They really care about them. Whereas the white culture now has moved so far into separating, the inconvenience of having an elderly person around, they put them into a nursing home. And it's not all the place that we find ourselves now. The people have to work maybe two jobs just to keep a family going. And they have found that they can't. They can't take care of an elderly person anymore. And that's part of what we have lost. So much of what we have lost. The community, the all things in common, the working together. And I think in what's coming, I think the great purification is coming. That's what Elder Red has talked about a lot. And that's what he prepared for. That the only way people will survive is when they start to help each other. And different people in the group can contribute different things. Whatever their challenge is, that's what they can contribute. Some have food, some are spiritual leaders. Some can take care of children or take care of the elderly. They have all these different things, teachers. So he wanted to help the Cherokees move to that arena, to where they could start forming small communities and start helping each other.
Well, I know he was a very traditional in his thinking in many ways, but this was a man that spent 28 years in the United States Air Force and retired as a full colonel. So, you know, it wasn't like he lived in a vacuum. He knew exactly what was going on in the world, and if anybody knew where the threats were coming from, it would be someone who had worked in the Strategic Air Command and had worked at Cheyenne Mountain like John had.
Those times were before my time, so I didn't know John at that time. I only knew of him since we started working with the Department of Interior. Part of the time our job went with directly under the Department of Interior because it was modernizing all the land records for BLM, the mining claim records, where the government had a hand in these things. And we did put up a system in Alaska, and apparently they're still using it from the last I heard. Another lady and I went up and installed the system. That was a different experience.
Well,
I was much into bringing back ceremony for the charity.
Well, I know he was very concerned because you know, in the old days, you know, if you didn't know what clan you belonged to, you simply weren't Cherokee. And Cherokees are so far from being Cherokee now, they have no idea just how far they are. And, you know, the old prophecy says that it would be the Cherokees that would lead the rest of the Indian nations back to the Great Spirit. And if that's true, well, you know, we're all in a lot of trouble because since John and I talked about it, he said since the end of the Civil War, the Kituwa Society has been unable to fulfill its duties because of all the infighting that went on inside the families, especially after Redbird Smith's death, and you know, at the turn of the century period, Redbird Smith was a very similar situation to Yukiuma of the Hopi, where Redbird was fighting allotment of land. He wanted the land to remain in common rather than go into severalty. And he was in prison for a while, as Yukiuma was. And they resisted allotment. They resisted enrollment. And but after coming out of prison, you know, Redbird said, "Well, you know, there's no use fighting it."
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
I know after going into coming out of prison, I know that he came over into Missouri and personally recognized a lot of the Cherokees over here that are laughed at by other Cherokees today. It's really kind of a sick situation, and the only way to explain what's going on is simply because of tribal politics.
There's so much of that. And you're right. The Cherokees have lost so much. Red Hat really agrees about that. That the true Cherokee, it was like they had lost their culture. And it's going to take a lot for them to get that back if they even can anymore. And the culture isn't like a lady from Tahlequah thought, well, we're not going to give up our televisions and go back and live in a teepee or something like that to regain our culture. And John laughed at that. He says, well, actually, the Cherokee never did live in teepees.
Yeah, exactly.
Then he said, that isn't what the culture is all about. It's helping other people. It's getting that attitude of caring about each other. And not thinking that in everything, what's in it for me? That has to be dropped in. It's what is good for the people. That's where the thought has to be.
Well, I know early, I guess back in the 60s, John became involved in the activism in the wake of the birth of the American Indian Movement, but became disenchanted. And I know nowadays, well, let me digress by saying that any nation can be taken over by a vocal minority of 2 or 3% of the people. And the situation that we have nowadays among Native Americans is that there are very few very vocal people, and they holler and scream a lot about things that they don't understand, and they spread rumors, and they have a lot of them have very evil intent. And I know one of the biggest shockers when I came to the realization when John taught me what the definition of witchcraft was in an old Cherokee way, and I was absolutely shocked when he said, well, any bad thought that entered a Cherokee's head was considered to be witchcraft, and bad thoughts were simply routinely dismissed from people's heads. Not that
sounds like a
good plan. not that witchcraft didn't exist, but you know, there's always people that are mentally ill. But I was reading in the, about the history of the around the turn of the century in the Cherokee Nation. Most of the ceremonialism stopped, and you know, in the 1880s and 90s, but that that witchcraft continued to be practiced, and it's continued to be practiced up till this day. And I know people who are practicing Cherokee witches. I mean, now these are people that we routinely put to death, you know, 100 years ago, and these are the people that are claim. Many of these people are claiming to represent Cherokee culture and representing themselves as Cherokee teachers, and books are being written about it. And, you know, the average Cherokee, I mean, doesn't even know. I mean, I've gone to and spoken with full-blood Cherokee young people. And, for instance, at the Cherokee tobacco shop at Gore, Oklahoma, by the casino. And I said, hey, by the way, you know, what clan do you belong to? And they'll kind of give me this puzzled look and say, Cherokee? You know, they don't have a clue. And people don't have a clue about what it is to think correctly.
But so, from what I'm seeing is they're starting to get this yearning to get this back. They want the clan to, they want to belong to something. They want to know what clan they belong to. And it was like interesting that John belonged to the long hair clan, which is the peace clan. And I was adopted into the wolf clan, which is the warrior clan. And they had two chiefs. During peacetime, they had the long hair clan would be the chief, and he would be in control of what happened in the tribe. Then during warrior time, it was the wolf clan that would produce the chief. And then the wolf clan chief would take over. And so that was interesting too, that we were on each of those two clans.
Yeah, I know that wasn't lost on me either. I noticed that because the two clans are pulling together, you really can't beat them. In an old Cherokee way, the peace chiefs who came from the long hair clan were not precluded from going to war when they didn't have to stay in camp. They usually did, but they, if they wanted to go to war, they could. And I know John was spending quite a bit of his time you know, warring against others that were just plain being criminals.
He spent quite a bit of time on the internet doing warrior stuff. That he wanted so much to be able to do the peace clan, to the long hair clan, the peace, the loving thing. But first, the evil had to be broken. It had to be exposed, I suppose. Sometimes we don't even know where we are or what we're doing. People think they're okay, like in Christianity so much. They're taught that they're okay because Jesus died on the cross. And that isn't true. It's what's in the heart that counts. And just because you believe that Jesus died on the cross and everything is cool, you can go and hurt somebody. And that's so much of what has infiltrated into the church. That isn't the way of the Cherokee. That isn't the way of the Chippewa people. So Dr. Kilhan and John wanted to bring that to ceremony. That's what they got from the other side, from the ancestors, to bring back the ceremony of the Cherokee. And that's quite interesting, actually, because they have 7 ceremonies. 6 cyclical ceremonies, and they're in concert with the cycles of weather, with the moon cycles. But the interesting part of the first 2 ceremonies, their first ceremony in the fall, the Great New Moon ceremony, that's equivalent to the Rosh Hashanah. I was going to say Happy New Year, of the New Year of the Jewish people. And then 10 days later, the Jewish people have the Day of Atonement, which is the Yom Kippur celebration. Well, the Cherokees have the same thing. They have the Great New Moon ceremony, and then they have 10 days later, they have the propitiation or the cementation ceremony. And sometimes some people call it the friendship ceremony. But that also has purification rites, removing any unforeseen barriers that stand between us and Creator. So it's like they're the same thing. The Jews and the Cherokee have the same two beginning ceremonies.
John and I both felt, let me first say that James Adair, back in the 1750s, published a book in London called The History of the American Indians, and he knew Hebrew, he spoke Welsh, and he lived with the Cherokees for about 40 years, and he came to the conclusion, based on what he knew, that there had to be some kind of a connection between the Hebrews and the Cherokee. But John and I both felt that the connection went further back, that the Hebrews and the Cherokees were both connected to original mother civilization of Sumeria. The Cherokee, those that still remember, you know, the origin story, say that in 1750, Agulkala called the whole nation together and announced. Told the old story about how we came to this land from across the Eastern Ocean during the time of the Stone Age man, and the Cherokee have migrated back and forth between here and Mexico at least twice. And I know not a lot of people know this, and we've always been a mixed blood people. In 1540, when De Soto visited us, he commented on the red-haired and blonde-haired children that were running around in our streets. So you know, we're not saying that the Cherokees are lost to Israel. We're just saying that there had to be a connection with something much older.
Yes, and a little more recent than that, along with some spiritual descendants of Abraham. That's the red hat knew that we were. And along with that, what he understood was that the Cherokee were descendants of Keturah, the third wife of Abraham. And there was a story among the Cherokee how they got their name Keturah. I guess there were seven elders that went out and they fasted and prayed and meditated. And after that 7 days, they were told to call themselves Keturah. They were told to call themselves Ketua, but they weren't told why. Well, then later, we received the revelation that the Cherokee were descendants of Keturah, the third wife of Abraham, which with the R and the W becomes out Ketua.
Well, I know he said that his grandmothers, first let me explain that there's several different Cherokee dialects, and one is basically considered to be dead. And the dead dialect is the Ketua dialect. And in all the Cherokee dialects, there is no R, but there is a W. But he distinctly remembers his grandmothers, when they said Ketua, they pronounced it Ketura with the trilled R. And if you go back into the Bible and realize, well, Abraham came out of basically, you know, what is Ur, you know, which is those people were descendants of the Sumerians. And, you know, we're talking about thousands and thousands of years ago. And, you know, it's an established scientific fact that the Phoenicians were traveling worldwide with plank ships, trading all over the world. And another interesting fact is that the only place you can find Phoenician skeletons with the dolichocephalic or long-headed skulls, other than in coastal areas, is in the Appalachian mountain chain, where the Cherokees resided, and they are surrounded by cemeteries of a completely different people, and that our language was completely different from those people that were around us in the coastal areas and on the plains. And another interesting thing about the Cherokees is that we always insisted on an outlet to the sea. We had our outlet was the river, I guess, between Columbia and Charleston, South Carolina. So apparently we had been a seagoing people earlier in our existence and had migrated here as our elders had taught us.
And even along with that going, you know, having an outlet to the sea, the Cherokee wanted to live by water because going to water was one of their spiritual things in the morning, and it was a cleansing thing and a purification thing. So that goes back to the same kind of thing as with the Jewish ancestors.
Mm-hmm. Mitzvah. Every morning, rain or shine, hot or cold,
yeah,
it's what they did, and you know, they were a clean people. Yeah, it's, you know, there are literally hundreds of parallels between what Cherokees do and what Hebrews do, but we really didn't understand because the Sumerian cylinder seals had not been translated until fairly recently. You know, mostly through the auspices of Zechariah Sitchin, who was a Hebrew. When he started asking 60 years ago, when he was in shul and studying Torah, and when he started asking certain questions, you know, he was basically told to shut up and just study what, you know. But that didn't suit him, so he became a scholar and went to the British Museum and ended up doing a lot of translation works, and now we know what we know today about Sumeria.
Mm-hmm. And that was Red Hat also. He studied under a rabbi in his younger years, apparently a brilliant man, Rabbi Joseph Stason.
That's right.
He belonged to this organization in California, the Great Thinkers of the World, and I can't think of what the name of it is. That he had this Rabbi Jason had a memory where somebody said something out of the Torah, he could start quoting it right somewhere. He could remember so much that was in his mind that John, and Red Hat was a brilliant man himself. He spoke 9 languages, and that's not counting Cherokee, so when he was getting fluent in Cherokee, that makes sense.
That astounded me because I never heard him speak anything other than English and Hebrew. I heard him, you know, pray in Hebrew a time or two. To bring folks a little bit up to date, I guess John was born in the 30s, and I guess during World War II. Now, he was born near Ava, Missouri, which is about 20 miles from where I sit in Kabul, Missouri. And the county that he was born in, Douglas County, has always been known as Booger County, because there were a lot of Cherokees that lived there that refused to go to Cherokee Nation, and these were some of his people. And there are a lot of Cherokees that reside there today. It's amazing. Just go down and look in the phone book at the surnames and match them up, you know, with the surnames that are in Oklahoma and the surnames that are in, you know, most people don't know that that there was a marriage between the Powhatan and the Cherokee names, and a lot of the names came out of early Virginia and all represent Cherokee names. That information's in the Gilcrease Museum, and people just don't know about it. And they got to ask themselves, you know, why is there a Pocahontas Society in the Cherokee Nation if there isn't a connection? A lot of people laugh at me when I tell them that, but they just don't know. But I know, yeah, he was a very intelligent man, and
And he truly believed that the Cherokee were going to lead the people back on a revival. He truly believes that the Cherokee can do this. And I think one of the things, maybe his teachings in Red Hat speak, that there will be a big revival in this country, but it won't be in the Christian church. It's going to be among the Native Americans. That's what the
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Well, I know the Chickamauga Cherokees here in Missouri and Arkansas and also in Alabama. There's a great revival of the stomp dance and the seven ceremonies here. And until you go to a stomp dance, you don't have a clue about what it is to be a Cherokee.
Yeah.
And I know the teacher here spent a couple of hours actually going through the every person that was there and had to assign them to clans based on their lineage. A lot of people didn't know what clan they belonged to, but he had a list of all the surnames and what clans these surnames came from. And until you are put in your clans and put in your arbors and understand the relationship and the symbiotic relationship between the clans, that there are certain articles that and substances that every clan must have, but they are forbidden from gathering them and have to be dependent upon another clan to gather them and have to go across the fire to another clan, and they all had to interact. All the clans were required to do certain things for ceremony, and they were all dependent on other clans to help them out. And so you get this clan dependent on that clan, and that clan was dependent on another one, and the whole thing was knitted together by someone who was very wise, that that knew that unless these people were put in a position where they had to depend on each other, that they would fall apart.
Yeah, that's where it's going, I think, where they need to learn to have communities. Just for practical survival, you know, practical measures. If things go bad, we need to have other people to help us with, help us up when we fall down.
Well, what is the biggest point that you think the Cherokees are missing right now? What was it that John harped on the most?
I think his biggest thing was Christianity. It's like they thought one of the chiefs, her mother is a Christian. This chief did not join Christianity, he is Cherokee. Well, her mother told her she's essentially going to be damned because she doesn't, isn't Christian. Well, the thing is that that was Red Hat's greatest pet peeve, I suppose. It was a televangelist preaching what he called false prophecy. Because they were teaching a message that was not what Jesus taught, but they were calling it the gospel of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his biggest, that's what he thought was the biggest problem for the Cherokee, to come back to being Cherokee, to come back to Creator, knowing it was what was in their hearts that related them to Creator, not what somebody did 2,000 years ago.
I know that the as Cherokees started to move into mainstream society, most of them in the beginning, and a lot of them still are down in Alabama, members of the of a very small Baptist cult called the Primitive Baptists. And the Primitive Baptist Church, you know, back in the 1800s. There were a lot of Indians, a lot of black people. Some of the first pastors of the Primitive Baptist Church were black, and they were originally holy people in the old river cults. And so they basically came about halfway into what we nowadays, you know, call mainstream Christianity. And I guess over the last 100 years, they've become even more and more assimilated into these churches, and
what Red Hat really was really up on was unconditional love without judgment. And Creator gives us unconditional love. And what he wanted people to understand, and the Cherokee to understand, is that they are loved unconditionally, and for them to be a servant of Creator, that unconditional love had to be within their own heart. And this is where he really put the emphasis on. It's what in our hearts that counts. And that's what was missing out of the Christians going to church on Sunday. And they were ignoring what was in their hearts. And that's where he had a real problem, that they were missing the boat. By believing something that somebody else did for them, that what was in their heart didn't count, and Red Hat taught it does count. That's what we're going to be judged on, is what is in our hearts. And he felt so strongly about that. He wanted so much for the Cherokee people to understand love is required. It's like so many people, you hear them asking, what is the will of Creator? What is God's will for my life? Well, it's like God is unconditional love. Well, his will is unconditional love for our lives. If we have unconditional love in our heart for other people, then we are in Creator's will. And it's like the Ten Commandments. It isn't just law separate from love. It's that if we are in Creator's Creator's unconditional love into a oneness with Him, then the Ten Commandments will be the product of our life. That will be what we live, because we are in a oneness with Creator. We have unconditional love. And it's like something that He taught, that there are in truth many religions, but there is only one love. All love in the world is in oneness with the greatest love of all, the unconditional love of Creator. And that's where the unity comes between all people, all religions. It's that love. All people have love and the capacity to love, the potential to give unconditional love. But mostly we don't want to do that, but that's what he taught. A few years ago, Red Tatler called me to officiate at a ceremony, to lead a ceremony, Cherokee ceremony in North Carolina. It was a gathering of the elders. And so we attended that, and that was fantastic. They lit the sacred fire, then in the evening, when they had the ceremony around the sacred fire, at this one point, Red Hat was speaking about, he was honoring the ancestors, and this wind came up, and we were in the middle of this long field, and as he said, there were trees all along the side, and as the wind came up, it only brought the leaves from the trees that were directly opposite of us, and there were hundreds of leaves that just came up and slowly came down over us and the fire. And there were probably about 60 people around, in a circle around the fire there. I think we had two or three complete circles because there were that many people. But it was just awesome. It was, the ancestors were there, and you could feel the presence of Creator and the ancestors. And that's what he wanted for the Cherokee people, to know that it's what's in our hearts that counts. Not the coldness that you see in so much of Christianity, but it's real. That, he wanted to bring the love back to the Cherokee. So that's what he was all about.
Yeah, I know some of these manifestations, with the weather or wind or thunder, and a lot of people nowadays say, that's all bull and superstition. But I'll tell you something. My wife and her brother were descendants of the Pink clan, and the day we buried him, they were living in Utah at the time, down in central Utah, and the wind doesn't blow 60 miles an hour in Utah every day. Every few years it might happen. I know when we went out to the cemetery to bury him, a wind started out of the west, and that's the direction that the people walk, when they pass. The wind was blowing so hard that I could hardly hear. Now, I have a really strong voice, and I have a very loud guitar, and I was singing Amazing Grace at the funeral, and I couldn't hardly hear my guitar. It was blowing at least 60 miles an hour out of the west, and it was the most amazing display of, haha, I'm not dead, I'm here. and I know Richard was just that way. He was quite a guy, and very, very few people, but they were born in northern Arkansas, And that's one of the first places that the Cherokees went to. There's one ethnologist from University of Arizona that says that he has proven scientifically that Arkansas and Missouri was the original homeland of the Cherokees after they came up from South America or Mexico the second time, and that we moved from here into the southeast. But the data had been sitting around for a long time, and when he looked at the old diagrams of archaeological sites and realized, oh, these are stomp grounds, and stomp grounds are only built by Cherokees, and so he's able to prove back 800 years, and said he'll be able to prove back 1500 years when he gets a chance that that this was so. And this is a man who is a National Science Foundation fellow and a White House fellow. But I know, now tell us a little bit about James Gillihan. James and Red Hat were pretty good friends. I understand James held Sitting Bull's pipe.
Yes, he was a keeper of Sitting Bull's pipe for quite a few years. Dr. Gillihan was raised by the Sioux Indians, the Lakota, but he was Cherokee. But there's a very interesting thing about Dr. Gillihan, Jim. In 1976, I believe it was, he was at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and he had cancer, and it had gone throughout his whole body. It had metastasized, I think it's the word. And he had lost one lung to it, and all along one side of his body, they had taken out organs and everything. So he had been given about 3 weeks to live at this point. Well, then, I think it was Fool's Crow. I believe Fool's Crow was the one that sent medicine men to him at the Mayo Clinic. He sent two of them because he couldn't go himself for some time. So these two went to have ceremony with him at the hospital there. And so as long as Jim was here, he was on his deathbed anyway, they allowed medicine men to smoke in there, which was part of their ceremony. So they had their ceremony for 4 days, and then they left, and after that, when the doctors came in, the nurses came in and got the blood from him, and then pretty soon, they came in and got another sample of blood from him, and all of the cancer was gone, and they couldn't believe it, and that was way back in 1976. And I believe that that was one of the reasons why Jim was given Sitting Bull's pipe, to be keeper of Sitting Bull's pipe, because I think they believed that if Jim had that kind of faith that could heal him from his horrible cancer that had taken over his whole body, that he had the faith that was needed. He had the kind of heart that was needed to keep Sitting Bull's pipe and keep it sacred. And then he was to go out and have pipe smoking ceremony with other people to bring people together in residence, and that's what he did. He started a family after that point because he realized how important family was, and so he started this Red Bee family. And I have one of those Red Bees, and Elder Red Hat had a Red Bee. And apparently the Dalai Lama was one that had a Red Bee. And his son, Dr. Gillihan, was good friends with him. And he was, I believe he is also part of the Red Bee family. So Dr. Gillihan was a very, very special man. And he considered Elder Red Hat to be his teacher. And so it was like the two of them, Elder Red Hat didn't feel like he should be a teacher to Dr. Gillihan, but yet Dr. Gillihan was a little older than Red Hat was. But Jim told everybody that Red Hat was his teacher. And Red Hat had those stones that he found. They found in a cave, and they say Red Hat, Jim had the stones first. Dr. Gillihan. And they had the symbols of Egyptian and Phoenician writings and symbols and pictures on them. They were found in southern Illinois, I believe it was. And so for a while, we had those stones here, too, and were showing them to various people. At the end, there is that Ten Commandments stone up here a little ways, close to Albuquerque. And they feel like that was probably ancient Israelites that were probably here, because it's the Ten Commandments written in an ancient language that looks like maybe Old Hebrew or Phoenician. That's quite interesting. And there must have been waters here. Maybe there was a river or something.
Yeah, apparently it's a Decalogue stone there in Laguna, and I think they say it's Phoenician. So apparently, you know, they predict that most of the western United States is going to become inundated and will go under the ocean. Apparently, this has happened in times past because it looks like it's going to happen again. I know my son found an abalone in a riverbed here in Missouri. You know, you know, go figure. And he walked in the hand list to me the other day. I just couldn't believe it.
And here around Laguna, the earth is so full of salt, and they say that this area was under the ocean, under salt water, a long time ago. So I hope it doesn't happen again unless I have a big boat. That reminds me of what we're called to do, like Noah. He was called to build his big boat out in the middle of the desert. And people must really have laughed at him and made fun of him. So, Red Hat was called to do this work of what Creator did. There were some people that questioned a lot of the things. Creator doesn't say that, well, people are going to like what you say. It's like Jeremiah. That was one of John's, he thought very highly of Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah in the Bible. When Jeremiah was...
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Was sent to tell Jerusalem that it was going to be destroyed. It's like that's the message that Red Hat has for the world. He was sent as part of the house of Israel to the world to tell them something about what is coming, because it seems like before Creator allows a country to be destroyed or a city to be destroyed, first he sends a prophet to tell them why. And apparently that's one of the reasons for the book Red Hat Speaks. to tell people why we are going to go through the purification. The message that Red Hat has for people of the world, for the Cherokee people, for the House of Israel, his message was the way we should have been. When Creator called, no one would answer. And this answers why we're facing the purification, why we're facing Armageddon. We did it to ourselves. Essentially, that's what Red Hat, that's what his message was. We did it to ourselves. But we can help a little bit now. We can change things. We can make a difference in this world. We may not be able to stop the purification, but maybe it doesn't have to be as bad as it could be. So I think we can make a difference. I really believe we can make a difference.
Well, I know he, I started to allude to something earlier. I know that when he was about 9 during World War II, he started having visions of what was going on in Germany during the Holocaust.
Oh, yes.
And so later on, I guess, he moved to Tulsa, and his, the friends that he played with were Jewish boys. I guess they're, he became, acquainted with their rabbi, and was later adopted. You know, was taught Hebrew and went to shul and converted to Judaism. But a lot of people, it's like a lot of things that Cherokees don't have a clue about. A lot of the Cherokee people don't understand that Cherokee religion is the old religion, and or you know, or plus anything else you want to incorporate into it. That your own religion was your own business. And nobody had a right to say anything about what your religion was. And so he actually was adopted by a Levitical priest and became a Levitical priest.
Apparently his name is in the registry.
The American Jewish Archives.
I believe so.
I know during, I know eventually he became an Israeli citizen, and I guess at some point he was a dual U.S. Israeli citizen, and served as a military attaché between the two countries also. But he was highly thought of in both camps, and passed messages back and forth between the two of them. And he told some really interesting stories about his Air Force career that we don't have time to go into, but... Well, if now that John has walked west and he's been gone, I guess 4 or 5 months now, about over 4 months, what do you think he's thinking now?
Well, after he crossed over, that was December 30th. It was about 3 days later, and he was here again. Has been here ever since, off and on. But the message I got when he returned was that he had gotten permission from Creator to continue this work to help me, that I would be the legs, the hands, the voice, but that he would be guiding this mission. And I don't know how we get these things from the other side. It's not like you really hear voices. I think he used to hear voices. He was closer. You know, the veil was thinner for him. But I get these things. I know these things when they come to me, but it's not like I hear voices or anything like that. Only once I heard a voice, and that was a fatal thing that I needed to hear. But it seems like most of the time, Red Hat can get these messages across to me. And so I think, oh, that's fantastic. I'm so glad I could hear. And it isn't the real hearing through the ears, but it's like when the Holy Spirit speaks to people. Christians, in general, are so quick to say, God said. That was one of John's very pet peeves. They're so quick to say, God said. And yet they say, if you hear the voice of God, you really need to go to a doctor and see if you're schizophrenic or something.
Right.
So it's like, and the Christians with the same thing with angels. He had the same problem with that. they say there are angels. There's Gabriel, there's Michael, there's Rick, Raphael. There's all these angels. And yet, if a person says they heard from an angel or saw an angel, then Christianity isn't allowed to go that far.
Yeah, they're immediately suspected of, well, I can't, you know, there's no more angels anymore, so you must be a familiar spirit, it's of the devil.
Yay.
It's absolutely amazing.
Uh-huh. And it's like, they'll say it, teach it on the one hand, and deny it on the other hand. And he really had a problem with that. But the other side is very real. The ancestors are very real. And they are there to help us. If we will open our minds to them and... No, I'm not saying channeling or anything like that. I don't do that kind of thing. But I am guided by the Holy Spirit of Creator and the ancestors. Apparently, they must have permission from Creator because they sure help us out a lot. I think a lot more than what we realize even.
Well, I think everybody realizes that you can't think two thoughts at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I know that I didn't know, you know, what it was like to hear from Creator until about 1990. And I actually had heard from him in 83 when I was told that my wife was going to die during a certain period of time, and she did, but it was 13 years later, a three-day period. So I guess that was kind of his shot across my bow. But everybody that I've talked to that Creator speaks to basically says that... it's kind of like, well, like it's usually when you're either falling asleep or waking up, and you're kind of in that twilight in between. Probably what the psychologists call the alpha stage. And it's kind of like a thought that'll come into your head. And, I mean, when it comes into your head, you're so surprised.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh my gosh, I didn't think that. Where'd that come from? And that's it, and that's Creator speaking to you.
Yes. And it seems like the more people are aware that the ancestors or Creator, the angels, whomever, they can communicate with you. And the more people seem to be aware of this, the more communication they will receive. Helpful, loving communication that will help us get through hard times. Or give us understanding when we're going through a very difficult time.
Well, I know in the ancient camp of Israel, there were a couple of people going around prophesying, and people went to Moses complaining about it. His attitude was basically, well, so what? You know, and what he said was, you know, I would that everyone would be a prophet. You know, so it was the natural order of things. He understood that, but the people then and the people now are lazy, and they want to someone else. They said, oh, you know, they had the opportunity to go up the mountain to meet Creator. They said, no, you go meet Creator and come down and tell us what, you know, what he wants. And that's, you know, how many, you know, what, 3,000 years ago or more. And we haven't moved very far in thousands of years. We basically don't want to hear from Creator. And then when things happen that are earth-shattering, like the things that are going to be happening soon, with great inundations and great earth changes, and, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, we'll say, oh, woe is me. How could these things have come upon us and we weren't warned? When all along, you know, and after we die, you know, Creator will say, hey, you know, I've been screaming in your ear all your life and you weren't listening.
Right.
Or when, or you were blinded by your preachers or whatever. And it's really kind of a sad situation because so much of it could be prevented. And it can still be mitigated. That was John's his message was that it's going to be bad, but we can still mitigate or lessen, you know, what's going to happen. It's too the die is cast, but we can still do things.
Yeah.
So what can we do to come together as communities, and you know, what would John have us do?
Every person can make a difference, and I know that that's one thing. of him that is very strong is that each person in my own heart, I can make a difference. I can help somebody. I can love somebody. And sometimes when, say we have a neighbor or someone and we don't feel like we can love them like we should, love your enemy kind of thing.
Yep.
What Red Hat taught was that you can still do a kindness for them. And as we do kindness for other people, eventually the love will be our first response. That's what Red Hat taught me all the time was our first response to any situation reveals who we truly are. And we want that to be a response of love. And so often it isn't. So often it's anger or something associated, something negative. Where we want to have compassion, we want to have love for other people. That's when we will be ready to be creative. So even if maybe we can't change the whole world, we can prepare ourselves to be creative. And I think that that's a very important thing for me. That's the one thing that God really wanted people to understand. They need to make this decision, this choice. Listen to creative, listen to the Holy Spirit, the answers when they try to help us. And so he knows the charity people can get there. He knows they can be a model for the world. And somebody sure needs to, because I just read the book, The Quickening, from Art Bell.
Uh-huh.
And while we are headed in such difficult, to such difficult times, and I've been reading a Jewish newspaper on the internet, and it just is so distressing to see how much violence and how much hate there is out there. We need to try to put a little bit of love out there to dispel some of this darkness, some of this hate. That's why all the fighting is, and that's why the Palestinians will always be fighting with the Jews, because the hate is driving them. And they're constantly reminded of the hate where they live, in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip. It's a constant reminder, and the children are taught to hate. So there can't be peace when hate is in the heart. It just doesn't work that way.
That's
the only way we can have peace is when there is love in my heart. When I give you unconditional love, we will get along. Because I don't expect anything from you. And if you do, if you say something that is hurtful to me, I would have a lot of compassion for you if my heart is full of unconditional love. Then I would just try to help you get to a better place. And that's where Red Hat was coming from. To help other people get to this better place. And that's what his hope is for the charity people, that they will each begin to help other people get to this better place.
Well, they have nowhere to go but up. I know John told me a comical story. I was talking with him about the Cherokee Nation of Mexico and how Mexico, their federal government had recognized a group of Cherokees in Coahuila. Now, when Sequoia died, he was trying to find the so-called lost Cherokees that had gone to the base of the Rocky Mountains. Well, Rocky Mountain chain kind of peters out in Coahuila, Mexico, and he was looking for these people when he died. He was also being hunted by our government and by the Mexican government, and was very ill and was forced into a cave and died there. Apparently, was being cared for, you know, by some of the Cherokee families that were living there. And I guess here within the last 5 or 10 years or so, a group of Cherokees in traditional garb visited this town, and it wasn't that Cherokees hadn't visited this particular town, is that none had shown up in their traditional clothing. And when this group showed up in their traditional clothing, they were ushered to the hacienda that had taken care of Sequoia, the same family, and were taken to where he was buried. And all these things happened, and Cherokee Nation of Mexico .com, and you can It's a fantastic story, and you can it'll actually be read to you on the internet. But I know John was speaking to one highly placed Cherokee Nation Tahlequah official who will remain nameless about the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. And he said this official said, he says, I was on their website, and he said, well, you know, what's up with all those funny clothes they were wearing? He says, I see they believe in all that herbal medicine stuff. So, you know, that's their culture. And here's a guy who's a very highly placed official in the Cherokee Nation, basically showing his ignorance about what it really means to be a Cherokee.
Right. And that's one of the things that was lost in the Cherokee. And that, well, you mentioned the herbal medicine, and that, I think, is a very important thing. I would hope that there are enough Cherokee out there who have this knowledge, that they will pass it along so it won't be lost.
Well, there's certainly a resurgence of herbal medicine in this country. I know here the Ozarks, here in the Ozarks, south here in Mountain Home, Arkansas, is the largest mail order herbal medicine warehouse in the world. And there's still a lot of traditional people that that collect the herbs and bring them into certain central points, and that's how they make their living here in the Ozarks. And there's still a lot of Cherokees here that that are descendants of families that were made outlaws by John Ross when their ancestors refused to come into the Illinois campground. And they said, well, you know, we don't want to be slaves in chains on a reservation. You know, so we'll stay here, we'll hide out. And they're here to this day. And
so some of the knowledge is being retained. That's a good thing.
Oh, definitely. But the Chickamauga Cherokee prophecy, I was talking with one of their chiefs a few years ago, and he said that his grandfather told him that before any kind of resurgence of our culture, he says, we'll be taken back to the dirt.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
You know, and which means, you know, there will be a resurgence of Cherokee culture, but not until most of us are dead.
Sometimes we don't get up or do something until we get rock bottom. And that may be part of it. I hope that that isn't true, but...
Well, Clifford Alford was our guest a few weeks ago, and Clifford had a traditional medicine clinic in Tahlequah for several years. And the traditional elders made him a caretaker of several springs outside of town. And he had a thriving practice till one of the local preachers informed his congregation that that Clifford was the Antichrist. And, you know, at that point, everybody stopped coming to his clinic except for maybe one or two people. So he closed the clinic and continued to go out, and, all, and if anybody called, you know, then all kinds of weather, you know, snow, sleet, rain, he'd go out and, you know, for about 2 years, and you know, he gathered food and you know, went to water, and, you know, he said two years later, that same Christian preacher came and apologized to him and said he was sorry that he lied, but they knew it was a lie when he said it. And he asked for his forgiveness, and he said, well, he said, I'll forgive you if you make restitution, and he refused to do that, so he bodily threw him out of his house. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that, that's the kind of thing that goes on and shows just how assimilated, I know what one person says, that the Cherokees have become whited.
Yeah, that really has happened. And Red Hat used to joke about that sometimes, that anybody who teaches what Jesus taught, if they say the words that Jesus taught according to Scripture, they will be called the Antichrist.
Yeah.
And he used to joke about that quite often, that you have to teach this false message to be called a Christian. If you teach what Jesus taught, you'll be called the Antichrist. I don't know, it's like they teach one thing and deny it on the other hand. It's very strange.
They come close to me with their lips, but they deny the power thereof, I think, is one of the scriptures somewhere.
Yeah. Mm. They on their lips, but flesh on their heart.
How interesting. Because I know, you know, John, you know, may have been a you know, Jewish religion-wise, but he was closer to Christ than anybody I knew.
He was, and he wanted it to be real. He didn't want to pretend something that was a lie. He wanted to have it be truth, to be honest. Like he said, truth isn't just what we understand or what we know. Truth actually exists, it's real. And so he wanted to reach for truth. And even though sometimes he couldn't live up to something, he would tell me, just because I can't live this, I still don't want to preach something less than true. He still wanted to talk and teach truth. Even if he fell short, the truth still existed. It was still there.
What a concept.
Yes, it really is.
What a concept. Well, I know John, when I met him, he was very ill. He had, level 4...
I don't know, but it was terminal emphysema.
Yeah, occlusive, COPD, I guess is what they called it.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, he says, that's what you get. That's what I got for smoking 3 packs a day for 50 years.
Yes.
And, well, and I guess it got Jim Gillihan, too. I heard one years ago, one Indian said that he said the white man's sacrament is abused by Indians and is killing them, and the red man's sacrament is being abused by white man and is killing them. You know, and it's, you know, Indians have problems with it, but John didn't have a problem with the drink, and but he's I guess, you know, he's 5/8 Cherokee, so, you know, if there is any truth to, I think some years ago, there was actually a study done that said that there was some kind of a chemical thing that actually helped Native Americans be susceptible to alcoholism. And that's the problem with mixed breeds. You know, you get it from both sides.
Well, Jim Gillihan didn't have that problem. He lost one lung to cancer, and then he had a very bad car accident, and his other lung collapsed. And there were prayers all over the world for that man, and he made it through there. His lung healed itself, apparently. And so, but he was having trouble breathing. It was very difficult for him, a lot of pain that he went through. But then he lived for a while after that.
I didn't have the privilege of meeting him. He was alive, I guess, up until, what did he? He walked west about a year before John did, right?
Yes, I believe so.
And I said...
He was the one that gave me my Indian name. He gave me a Lakota name. And it was Chante Washte Wing. And Good Heart Woman, and I just love that name. And actually, the name for Creator that moves me the most is Walkin' Tonka. That's a Lakota name for it. It's a Sioux name for Creator. For some reason, it seems like I have a memory of Walkin' Tonka. That name can just move me to tears. I don't know what it is.
Well, that Wakon, you know, Waka, Wakea. You know, it's all through. It isn't just Lakota. It's that's the name for Creator that's remembered by dozens, literally dozens of tribes all through through South Central America and North America. Well, we got about 10 minutes left. What do you think? I really, at this point, I don't have any more questions.
Let's see. There's several things here about stuff that I might want to comment on. There's one story about the two wolves. I think that your wife has had that story too. But I thought that was, it shows how the Native Americans would teach. They taught by stories like at the light of sight. Anyway, this one about the two wolves was the grandfather talking to the grandson, and he says, I have a terrible fight going on inside of me. There's two wolves fighting, and one of them is a very evil wolf. He's angry. He tries to hurt everybody. And the other wolf is a very good one. He's compassionate. He's kind. He's loving. He's generous. And the grandson says, oh, and the grandfather continued that it's going on inside of you too, grandson. It's going on inside of all people. And the grandson says, which wolf will win, grandfather? And grandfather says, the one you see. That goes along with our thoughts. It's like, do we want to have positive thoughts, things that will draw the angels closer to us? That will draw Creator Spirit closer to us. If we want to have those things, we have to control our thoughts. We have to think, feed the positive, and it will grow. So I just love this story about the two wolves.
I know that's a classic, and I get criticized, for talking about doom and gloom, but you know,
yeah.
Creator. I mean, he's. I mean, all this has happened before, and it happens in cycles. And we knew how to prevent this, and we know how to mitigate it. And if people actually listen to what these elders are saying rather than commenting on them, they'd understand. You know, that we're not. We're not all doom and gloom. That we're trying to teach people. Because they don't understand that we're all interrelated,
right.
And that what nations do, and what people do as an entire world, basically kind of dictates what's going to be happening to that world, and that it, you know, it's the individuals that make the difference.
In all your prophecies, because your website is awesome. There, you could spend a whole afternoon there and not even touch all of the information and all of the links that you have on there. I really needed to comment on that because that is a beautiful website. Anybody that wants to know anything about prophecy really needs to visit prophecykeepers.com. That's fantastic. And I, John used to talk about prophecy of the seventh generation because he was very good friends with his grandmother Sarah of the Six Nations in Canada. She's a beloved woman of the Six Nations, and I can't remember which tribe she belongs to. I think
Mohawk.
Anyway, there is this prophecy of the seventh generation, and I don't know who the author is. The author is unknown. But it begins, it starts out with, the time has come for unity and strength among all of mankind, for we are the keepers. The time has come to recognize the light that resides within ourselves, that light that lives within our brothers and sisters of all races. And so this is where I believe we are now, and this is the Native American prophecy of the seventh generation. And the Iroquois in Canada, I believe it is, they say that we are the seventh generation, that this is the time, and we need to see this light, and that's what the prophecy is, that the Native Americans are going to see this light in the world, and that is really awesome. That is fantastic. And they have it. The traditional Native Americans, they have this wisdom. They have the light, and they have the harmony, living in harmony with Creator and with creation. And if the other people of the world will take this message from the Native Americans and listen to it and start living that message, then there will be a revival in this world, and we can make a difference.
I know the harmony ethic was so important to the ancient Ketua people, and they would go to great pains to retain harmony, and if they couldn't, they'd leave. And, you know, which had happened, the Chickamauga pulled out en masse in about 1777, left Cherokee Nation and went to the Creek Nation, started making war on the Americans, and because, our chiefs were being suborned with alcohol and gifts and everything, and they just felt like the thing to do it was to fight. And, that was the Wolf Clan. And that's people that I descend from. Well, tell us about, now we've got a link to your book, Red Hat Speaks, on the website. And I guess folks can get it at www.iuniverse.com. And once they get to iUniverse, they just put in Red Hat Speaks. And I think the link for my website takes it directly to where they could buy it.
And I believe now that the book Red Hat Speaks can be ordered from any bookstore.
Amazon, I believe,
Yeah, it's at the wholesalers now.
Yeah, and you have an e-book version that's just $6, which is a great deal, and people can order it and have it in a few minutes and download it and print it out at home, and which is excellent.
And they can order that from iUniverse.com. www.iuniverse.com.
Well, excellent. Well, we sure appreciate you being our guest.
I'm so glad you called and allowed me to have this time to remember Red Hat and his teachings.
Yeah, absolutely. In about 6 months we'll have you on again, and you can tell us all about what John has been up to and have you doing, in the next 6 months. I know the elder that'll be on next week is Jaime Perez, and he's at a meeting with some of the Mayan elders, during the Cinco de Mayo Yeah, absolutely. He's done a lot of translation work for them, and he's a seventh level Jaguar priest himself. And he's running for mayor of El Paso. We got a lot of interesting people out here. Well, thanks a lot for being on Prophecy Keepers.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, you bet. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy Keepers, Prophecy Keepers, Prophecy
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Truth.
thrones us like a lover's hand upon the heart. The very breath you gave me glows intently through.